Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report's a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, or it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, France 24, NHK Japan, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We'll begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Recent regional elections saw a far-right party, the AfD, win in one eastern state and get 30% of the vote in another. This is the first time since World War II that extremist parties have come on top in Germany, and some people are worried that it will grow as the Nazi Party did in the 1930s. DW has a weekly program called The Tipping Point. The discussion today between a professor and 2 journalists on current affairs. The 3 factors leading to these election results were a very large number of immigrants from Muslim countries, arms shipments to Ukraine in the war with Russia, and opposition to gender identity politics. Populism is growing in most European nations with much support for nationalist ideals. These excerpts are from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Germany is reckoning with the results of regional elections that have left many questioning whether German history is rearing its ugly head. For the first time since Nazi rule, right-wing extremists have won a regional election in Germany in the state of Thuringia. The AfD, or Alternative for Germany, also came in 2nd place in neighboring Saxony. Now, other populists also snapped up votes by promising to stop immigration and to stop arms deliveries to Ukraine. So what does this mean for the future of Europe's largest economy and its relation to the world? This week on To The Point, we're looking at the rise of the far right. Is Germany at a tipping point? Nadine, let's start with you. What does the AfD stand for that was so appealing to voters in these eastern states?
Well, the AfD is 11 years old now. Most of the voters in Germany know what the AfD stands for. I would say in this election campaign, we saw like 2 or 3 main topics that the AfD focuses on. The main topic, the number one topic, is migration, to stop the influx of asylum seekers to Germany, to deport people from Germany to their home countries, the remigration, how they frame this concept. Then the second point is to stop the war in Ukraine by stopping the arms deliveries to Ukraine. And I would say the third point is more like a cultural war that they want to, or that they see, they argue against, well, the open display of homosexuality and also the use of a gender-neutral language. These are all points that were important for the AfD in this election campaign.
Now, these successes do have alarm bells going off in many quarters in Germany. Wolfgang, for the first time since the end of World War II, we're looking here at a party that German intelligence has designated as right-wing extremists in Saxony and Thuringia, winning these regional elections, one of them, the other one performing very well. How much of a taboo would you say has been broken here?
An European normalization, not a pleasant normalization, but we have seen this in many, many other countries before. Right-wing populists were governing in 15 countries of the European Union. And this Germany still is far from a situation where the AfD would enter the federal government. So to some extent, we hear typical German alarmist subtones in the discussion, but the development is not very pleasant, no doubt.
Okay, so you think this is a bit overblown. Matthew, maybe you can put this into perspective for our international viewers, those who are maybe not closely following German politics and understand how the AfD was seen previously, how a party that can be called right-wing extremist coming into power really resonates here.
Well, I think it resonates in particular, as we saw in these elections in the east of Germany, where there's a lot of frustration with the traditional parties, with the establishment parties in Germany, and in particular with the current government under Olaf Scholz. And as Nadine mentioned, migration has been a very central issue recently in Germany. There were some recent killings involving asylum seekers, allegedly, in Germany, knife attacks. And so this has become a very heated political issue, and the AfD has been very skilled in seizing on the migration issue and also the question of Islam in Germany, which is very closely related to that in the minds of many people, because most of the asylum seekers here have come from the Muslim world. And over the past 10 years, viewers might remember Angela Merkel's famous statement that that Germany can manage this influx of asylum seekers in the wake of the Syrian civil war in 2015. And since then, the country has brought in about 2 million people, and the AfD has, over that period, gone from the low single digits now nationally to the high teens, and in some states, Thuringia and Saxony, as we saw, over 30%. So their success is very closely tied to this question of migration.
10 years ago, the AfD is 11 years old now. Maybe 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, we would have said, well, the AfD is only a phenomenon for a short time. When we beat them in the elections, they will like more or less disappear. And now we know, no, they're here to stay, and they have like a long-term strategy to destroy the CDU, the conservative party here in Germany. They say, well, now we forced the CDU into really awkward, strange coalitions, because this is what's going to happen in Thuringia and also in Saxony, that maybe the CDU will work together with the ex-Communist Party of Sarah Wagenknecht. Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing about Thuringia and Saxony is that those are areas that have some of the lowest levels of migration in Germany. Most of the migrants who have come here are not in East Germany. They're in other parts of the country. But it is sort of in their heads that these asylum seekers pose a threat to German society and to German identity.
60% of people in Thuringia say, oh, it's dangerous because we have so many foreigners in this country. But there's only 8% of the share of people in Thuringia that come from foreign countries. So you see, I would say, a huge imbalance between the perception and the real numbers. And the AfD is clearly focusing on this, and they say asylum seekers are a danger to our security here, and they refer to Islamic attacks like in Solingen.
All right, so that is the pitch to voters. It seems to have resonated. So Wolfgang, Nadine has said the AfD is here to stay. Do you agree with that? Because one statistic that I found quite surprising coming out of these elections was looking at the youth vote. These weren't conservative older voters voting for the far right. It was, in fact, 38% of people between the ages of 18 and 24 who turned out to vote for the AfD.
AfD is here to stay, at least for a couple of years, and I would assume even longer. Again, Germany, it's not the island of the happy people. It is an European country, and you see it in almost all of these European countries, that these right-wing populist parties are becoming a quite stable element within all these party system. And there is a political space, as we have seen here in the perception of the people. There's a political space on the right wing of the party system. The Merkel, the previous chancellor of the German Federal Republic, moved with the CDU to the center of the party system and opened a political space on the right wing, and the right wing populists marched in. So AfD will be here. The second reason will be that migration, it's a problem which will not be solved during the next years to come. The political parties have to demonstrate that they are able to solve problems, to deliver. And this again opens a political space for an anti-system party, at least partially anti-system party. They have the privilege to monopolize the real opposition, and this makes it attractive to many people. So this is European normality. Unfortunately, they will stay here because the problems they campaign on, the problems will stay. Last point, migration, for example, it's not a problem which can be solved by the federal government in Germany alone. They need a kind of European solution, and I don't see this European solution so far.
Now, as we've said at the beginning, there is a lot of fear around what's happened here, partially because Thuringia was the place in 1930 where the Nazi Party had its first success, becoming only the second largest party in regional elections, and that allowed them into government. Wolfgang, do you think this is history repeating itself here?
No, not at all. And this is a wrong comparison. We would relativize the horrendous crime of the Nazi regime, and we should be more analytical. This is not simply an following up party of the National Socialist and Hitler. This does not really keep the point, and we don't find the causes for the strength of the right-wing populist party.
With only a few seconds left, Matthew, your thoughts? Do you think this is a dangerous moment?
I don't think it's dangerous. I agree with Wolfgang on that. But, you know, as Mark Twain said, history doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes.
Those were excerpts from a discussion on a program called Tipping Point, a roundtable discussion from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. They're also available at most podcast sites, as is the Shortwave Report. The entire Tipping Point program, 30 minutes, is worth listening to. Next, France 24. A press review of the Israeli media on the protest in Israel after Netanyahu refused to work on a ceasefire in Palestine. Then a brief update on Paul Watson, the anti-whaling activist who's being held in Greenland on a warrant from Japan. France 24.
Program after the news that six more Israeli hostages have been executed by Hamas, leading to mass protests, as we saw in the news. A few pieces in the Israeli press can help provide some of the context, really, to the massive backlash that the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is now on the receiving end at home. And Antonia is here to take us through it.
In the newspaper Haaretz, you've got some extremely damning pieces about the Prime Minister Netanyahu. This headline, Israeli hostages die so Netanyahu can keep his coalition alive. Of course, the headline, searing, and it's about the fact that Benjamin Netanyahu is plagued by fears of looking soft and being abandoned by far-right coalition partners. The illustration, I added clauses, hostages died, sorry, is what's on this poster, and it's written as if in a child's handwriting saying sorry about the deaths of those hostages. This article also goes into what happened at a cabinet meeting on Thursday, in which it was decided to keep troops in the Philadelphia corridor. Yoav Gallant opposed Prime Minister Netanyahu, and his response, according to leaked transcript, was, "This is the decision." That's what the article explains, and the suggestion of a veering towards slight autocracy or ignoring of opposing voices in Netanyahu's war cabinet. In this article, Biden, it's time to tell the painful truth about the Israeli hostages. This is talking about the way Benjamin Netanyahu represents himself very differently to his Western allies from how he does at home. It's talking about the Antony Blinken's visit 2 weeks ago in Israel, at the end of which he said there had been his discussions with Netanyahu had yielded something, that he had accepted a bridging proposal for a ceasefire and hostage release deal, only to see that since Netanyahu has added conditions, including the condition that the Israeli army will never leave the Philadelphia corridor, and as such, making what Blinken said null and void. And so what this article says is it's one message in English and quite the opposite in Hebrew. So it's another searing criticism of the Prime Minister.
Since July, Paul Watson has been detained in Greenland, awaiting possible extradition to Japan.
How are you? Your reaction to this?
It is what it is, and it puts more pressure on Japan.
Yet still, he remains upbeat. After almost 50 years of tireless anti-whaler activism, the environmentalist was nabbed under an international arrest warrant issued by Japan for allegedly causing damage to one of the country's whaling ships in the Antarctic over a decade ago. Watson is the founder of Sea Shepherd and well known for his often radical tactics in defence of marine life, such as confronting whaling ships out at sea. His direct action is said to have saved more than 5,000 whales around the world, making him an icon for environmentalists and a problem for whaling nations. This is part of why Watson and his supporters feel there is a vendetta against him. They say the alleged crime warrants a fine and not a potential 15-year prison sentence.
These allegations are actually no more than misdemeanors and hooliganism. You know, you'd get a $1,500 krona fine and you wouldn't face any time inside at all in jail. So it's ridiculous. This man's been held on misdemeanor allegations, you know, from another country.
More than 120,000 people have signed a petition for his release, and in Paris on Wednesday, crowds gathered to show their support. They see him not as a criminal, but rather a man who has dedicated his life to protecting the planet.
That press review and report were from France 24. France 24 may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English. They're also available at most podcast sites. On to NHK World Radio Japan. U.S. politicians are calling for a block on the sale of U.S. steel to Nippon Steel in Japan, which was approved by the shareholders in April. Russian President Putin spoke at the annual Far East Economic Forum, saying developing the Far East will be the national priority for the entire 21st century. He mentioned that the BRICS countries now account for about one-third of the global economy. NHK Japan.
U.S. media report that President Joe Biden is preparing to block an attempt by Japan's top steelmaker to acquire U.S. steel. The planned acquisition by Nippon Steel is facing growing bipartisan political opposition. Biden, as well as Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump, rivals in the U.S. presidential race, have said they will not allow the deal to go through. The Washington Post and other U.S. news outlets report that Biden is close to formally announcing he will prevent the planned acquisition. Quoting sources, the Post says that Biden has not received a recommendation from the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S. The committee has been investigating the proposed acquisition and assessing the deal's impact on U.S. national security. The paper says the decision would be a stunning rejection of a deal proposed by a U.S. ally and one that has generated major political controversy ahead of the November election. In a comment, Nippon Steel says it strongly believes the U.S. government will properly assess the deal in accordance with the law. It also says they have clearly conveyed to the U.S. government that the acquisition would not pose a threat to American national security. Meanwhile, the head of U.S. Steel has warned of consequences if the deal falls through. CEO David Britt told the Wall Street Journal that a plant would close and workers could lose their jobs. He also said the company would look to move its Pittsburgh headquarters to the southern U.S.
We begin in Russia's Far East, where President Vladimir Putin has made his address at the annual Eastern Economic Forum, sponsored by Moscow. He said developing the region will be a national priority for the entire 21st century. Putin had a clear message, saying the Far East region is the most important factor in strengthening his country's global standing and countering the West.
The important thing is that the Russian Far East offers a huge space to launch complex projects and develop new fields in order to take advantage of business opportunities. The region continues to grow and presents a direct opening to the markets of the future. Through this, we can break down the barriers that some elite Western countries are trying to impose on the world.
Chinese Vice President Hang Jing and Malaysian Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim were also on stage. Han indicated his agreement with Putin, noting the trade volume between China and the Russian Far East reached over $33 billion in 2023, an increase of over 50% year on year.
At present, Northeast China is making every effort to open up a new frontier. This is very much in line with the strategy for developing the Far East region that our Russian counterparts are promoting.
In a panel discussion with Han and Anwar, Putin mentioned the BRICS bloc of emerging economies. He pointed out BRICS now accounts for about one-third of the global economy.
Our relationship with BRICS is developing very successfully. We are now expanding our circle of participants, and the process is going well.
Putin said BRICS partners are now conducting 65% of trades in their national currencies instead of the U.S. dollar. Now, Anwar also met with Putin separately and pledged to boost ties with Moscow.
We, of course, decided to come in a big team to show our sincere attempt to enhance a collaboration. There's enormous potential that you have in Russia. You have done so much. And it is to our benefit, too, if we could share this and collaborate in all fields.
He says he accepted Putin's invitation to next month's BRICS summit being chaired by Moscow. Anwar says this marks a significant step toward his country's goal of joining the bloc, which includes Russia, China, India, and other developing nations. Anwar also says the Association of Southeast Asian Nations will enhance cooperation with Russia. Malaysia is set to chair the organization next year. Analysts believe Russia may be trying to strengthen ties with Asian countries amid international isolation due to its invasion of Ukraine.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They are heard at 10 p.m. at 11735 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp and at most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or can help support this program, there's a link for online donations at my website, outfarpress.com. Or you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Many thanks to everyone who's ever helped keep this freely distributed show on the air. Please help me keep this program going. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. Israeli troops continue raids in the West Bank where Palestinian forces are attempting to fight back. The U.S. government is considering which actions to take against the Venezuelan government for refusing to recognize the victory of their opposition candidate Edmundo Gonzalez. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Arrests, violence, and destruction have been reported as the Israeli military continue to mount raids across the occupied West Bank. Israel continued its raid on the Jenin refugee camp for a seventh day on Tuesday, while carrying out operations across various parts of the territory. Reports say one civilian was killed and dozens arrested when Palestinian groups said they are fighting with Israeli forces. The Jenin Battalion of Al-Quds Brigades, part of the armed wing of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad group, said its fighters are confronting Israeli forces using guns and improvised explosive devices, IEDs. In posts on the Telegram messaging app, it said it had achieved direct hits on Israeli troops. The Associated Press news agency quoted Mohammed Haj Hussein, a Jenin resident, as saying electricity and water supplies were cut off. "We are ready to live by candlelight and we will feed our children from our bodies and teach them resistance and steadfastness," in this land, he said. We will rebuild what the occupation destroyed, and we will not kneel. To the south, in the Tul Karim refugee camp, Israeli forces conducted a raid for the second time this week. A Palestinian teenager was killed by an Israeli sniper, according to the Wafa News Agency, which identifies the victim as Mohammed Kanaan. Al Jazeera's Nilda Ibrahim reported from Tul Karim, said the miner was shot in the neck as he was going to a mosque with his father for prayers. His father was injured in the abdomen in the incident. Palestinians say Israeli forces have raided the area over and over and are still there. The roads are empty and people are scared, she added. Footage shared online and verified by Al Jazeera shows military vehicles and bulldozers driving on the streets. According to Wafa, Israeli forces have imposed a curfew on the camp, preventing residents from leaving or entering. Elsewhere in the West Bank, the Israeli army was reported to have stormed Bir Zeit University, north of Ramallah, confiscating properties and publications. A young man was injured in a raid in Qalqilya, a city in the northwest of the territory, after Israeli forces opened fire. Two homes were also demolished by Israeli army bulldozers in the town of Az-Zawiya. Five people were arrested in the Hebron towns of Idna and Beit Umar. The U.S. government admits that, quote, it is considering what actions to take against the government of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, unquote. White House National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby made this announcement in a press briefing from the White House on Tuesday. Kirby said the U.S. actions will show him that all his political decisions have consequences, and in retaliation for the arrest warrant issued for Edmundo González Urrutia, wanted on criminal charges. Kirby said that Venezuela must be punished for, quote, refusing to recognize that Mr. González won the majority of votes in July 28. The Venezuelan prosecutor's office on Monday asked a court specializing in terrorism to issue an arrest warrant against González Urrutia for the, quote, commission of crimes of usurpation of functions. The request was made after the prosecutor's office summoned Urrutia on three occasions and he refused to appear.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu. No podcast, however. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online donations. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. This shortwave report, which is now in its 28th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the shortwave report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm still recuperating from a spinal injury, and I'm staying in a house that's connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.